To the Hour of the Time, I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pooh.
Oh, and honey?
Yes.
I had to say something to my friend that sent me something.
Okay.
It's that flag book.
Oh, the flag book, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Belle, for sending me that flag book.
You really liked that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I did, too. I think it was wonderful. What's going to happen right now?
Well, Allison's going to come up and do her stuff. Oops, I'm sitting on her papers.
Allison's going to come up right now, ladies and gentlemen, if Annie will bring her up to me. And she's going to do for you her Rush Limbaugh imitation. Now, bear in mind, she's only 10 months old. And if she can do it, anybody can do it. You see, it's no big deal to be a Rush Limbaugh. Come on, sweetheart. Oh, here she is. First time on radio. Let me see. Where's her props? Oh, boy. Look here, Allison. Here. Well, folks, she is just wowed. This is the first time she's ever sat in front of this microphone. Her eyes are about as big as silver dollars. And she's just taking it all in. And as soon as she gets used to it, we'll get her to take her props here. And she'll do her Rush Limbaugh imitation. There you go, honey. There you go. That's something to eat. Here. Yeah, that's right. Now take this one. Here you go. Now take this one. Here. Okay, now. Ladies and gentlemen, it is... Wait a minute. Hold it. Here you go. Grab it. It's Rush Limbaugh. Okay, do your act. Here you are. You're on nationwide radio. Oh, you keep letting go of your prop. Well, you did this perfect in rehearsal. Okay, let's put this one over here. Boy, you're just amazed, aren't you? There you go. Okay, now we're going to do it. Here. Let me see if I can get this one in place again. Okay. Now. Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh, broadcasting excellence, coming to you from the Conservative College of Broadcasting. Here, let me get this. Oh, boy. Well, everybody give her a hand. She did a wonderful job. Okay. Annie, why don't you just... Whoops, she's got my... Whoop, yep, she's got my headphones. Annie, just say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I thought I'd never in my life get her to even go near a microphone. If it wasn't for Allison tonight, she would never have done it. Well, what do you think, folks? Was that a good Rush Limbaugh imitation or what? Pooh, I want to thank you so much for helping out.
You're welcome.
And for providing the Rush Limbaugh props. And for being the engineer for the Rush Limbaugh Broadcasting an Excellent Show.
I like her when she did that.
Me too. Okay, Allison, since you did such a wonderful job, and Pooh, since you did such a wonderful job at assisting, this is just for you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I have a stack of things that I need to reveal to you tonight and tomorrow night and the next night until I get through this. It's all current events and news and things that you need to know. Things are happening. They're happening very fast. And I'm going to read you a letter. I'm going to read you an article that's going to appear in the next issue of Veritas. And I'm going to read you an article that appeared originally in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, written by Ari Shavit, and that was reprinted in the New York Times. And I think a lot of this stuff is just going to floor you. I'm going to make a prediction now because I can clearly see a pattern forming here, ladies and gentlemen, and I remember a remark that President William Clinton made on the Larry King show last year, in early 1995. Larry King was asking him about the 96 election and about his campaign and all that kind of stuff, and Bill Clinton made a remark that nobody else in the whole country picked up except for me. I heard it loud and clear. It was like somebody was beating it into my brain. He said, and I quote, "I don't think there's going to be a 96 election," end quote. I can see the preparations now. I warned you about the escalation of terrorist attacks, and I was right. The caller last night was absolutely correct. There was a terrorist attack in Saudi Arabia, which killed several Americans and wounded a whole lot more. If you look at the building, it looks just like the Alfred P. Murrah, federal building in Oklahoma City after the bomb explosion there. Only the attack made in Saudi Arabia was not a Ryder rental truck with fertilizer. It was a huge, gigantic truck full of high explosive military type. It's a wonder more people weren't killed outright. I've got to tell you that right now. But the amazing thing is that the instructions of the Pentagon and the State Department were that all foreign embassies military installations, barracks, etc., 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 were supposed to be barricaded so that no truck could ever get close enough to cause this kind of thing to happen. So somebody intentionally disobeyed that order so that it could happen. And it did. And I got to tell you something else, ladies and gentlemen. I can see the preparations. I can see the media propaganda on television preparing you for the worst terrorist attack in the history of the world to occur at the Olympic Games in Atlanta, Georgia, this summer, after which martial law will be declared. Patriots and militia members across this country will be pursued and tracked down. A civil war will erupt. There will be no 1996 elections. I can see it just as if I were gazing into a crystal ball. All across this country, they are storing foreign, Russian, and Eastern Bloc equipment. Most of it is NBC warfare type equipment. It is either for decontamination or for use in a contaminated area. All of it can be buttoned up tighter than a drum. And it has filters for radiation and for biological warfare and chemical agents. All across this country, foreign military personnel are here training. It's not a joke. It's not a lie. It is not supposition. It is not a guess. It is fact. Collected by intelligence service operatives all over this country. We have photographs. We have documentation. We have witnesses. We have tape recording of people asking people dressed in United States Army uniforms who can't speak English. We now have a German Air Force base on American soil, a permanent German Air Force base, not a training detachment. Not some people are coming over here for just a little while. A permanent German Air Force base on United States soil at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. German, East German, and other Eastern Bloc pilots have been brought to the United States and have been training at terrain identification from the air for several years now. I'm going to tell you this, and you had better listen to me. If you're not ready for a complete breakdown of society and civil war within the next year, you had better get ready right this moment, because I'm telling you, I can smell it, I can taste it, I can feel it, I can see it. The Olympic Games have nothing to do with the taxpayers of the United States of America. Yet they are assembling the largest military and security and police and government force in the history of the world to perform security operations at the Olympic Games at the expense of the American taxpayers. And it's going to cost several hundred million dollars, and I'm telling you right now, for several hundred million dollars, we do not need the Olympic Games in the United States of America, ever. If it cannot support itself from its own revenues, it does not need to be here. And for the danger that it represents to the Republic and to the people who are going to attend, I say, tell the Olympic Games to go somewhere else. Get them out of America and do it now. Cancel it. If that doesn't happen, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, that the globalists, the lying socialist puke-faced dog pigs in this world are going to kill people at the Olympics in Atlanta. And President Clinton's prediction that there will be no 96 election will come true. Did you just hear what they said? They're making the war against terrorism the major agenda at the G7 meeting. Do you think it's coincidence, ladies and gentlemen, that just in time, when Clinton is going down the tubes, all of these revelations about him are coming out now, he's in deep trouble, really deep, deep trouble. Everybody is objecting to what's happening. Americans are up in arms. All of a sudden, a bomb goes off in Saudi Arabia and kills a whole bunch of Americans, and now Clinton is back on solid ground. You had better heed my warning. You had better heed my warning. Every prediction I've made has come true. It's going to escalate even further. I believe this is the year that is, ladies and gentlemen. You see, they have to have their new world order by the year 2000. That's when the window closes. At midnight, ladies and gentlemen, the last day of December 1999, their window closes on the new world order. That's what they're talking about when they say that they only have a short window in order to bring their plans to fruition. You know why? Because as soon as the first day of the year 2000 dawns and there is no Messiah, and there is no fulfillment of any prophecy whatsoever, nobody will fall for their new world order anymore. It'll be all over. It'll be done with, finished. And all of those who have been neutralized by this bullshit will all of a sudden be unneutralized and will know that it was all a scam, like it's been a scam every single time it's ever happened. All of you who are waiting for the great Messiah, I'm telling you right now, he's not going to be here. And if he is, he's not going to be the Messiah. He will be what you call the Antichrist. He will be a liar, a deceiver. Pay attention. I'm giving you a warning that I've never felt so strong about anything that I've ever said before. I can see it all taking shape. It's so easy to decipher. And remember what I delivered to you the other night. I gave you the whole history from the Roman Empire through the Third Reich right up to the present day. And if you can't see it, you're blind. Blind as a bat. Dear Bill, we haven't heard from you at all since we mailed you the last package of documents. We, too, have been caught up in continuing research as well as the daily struggle to make a living and survive. Here is something precious to our hearts and minds. This marvelous tape is of a lecture given by one of our most beloved heroes, Leonard Peikoff, in 1986. You may remember his book, The Ominous Parallels, from which you've quoted over the air. Peikoff delivered this speech at the Ford Hall Forum to a sizable audience. I'm not going to play that tonight, folks, because I haven't heard it yet, but as soon as I have and determine how much time it is, I may play that on the air. And I continue. Lee and I realize, after having pulled together documents, manuscripts, historical, scientific, and technological data, political data on all the world's religions, covert and overt, philosophies and political systems, that only our founding fathers were legitimate politically, and only objectivism is sane, legitimate, or moral philosophically. This tape may just begin to explain why. We've also enclosed a little cartoon from a very useful book source we've ordered from them ourselves. They seem to understand what's going on. They carry interesting books, essays, and pamphlets covering much, but not all, data concerning the two Hegelian factions of the world order. The owners are booksellers, not ideologues, and as such appear to hold no particular opinions themselves. They just sell the data. You read it and do your own concluding. The cartoon is certainly explicit in identifying the two factions in the battle. The Vatican Catholic faction, of course, represents mysticism and collectivism in the feudalistic communism form, with a ruling elite. Ideologies of nihilistic mysticism present in all religions, Eastern and Western, self-denial, environmentalism, anti-capitalism, and abrogation of any private property rights held in place by religiously or politically motivated fear and force. This is an oversimplification, of course. The British Protestant faction, British Israelism, all Protestant religions, Judaism, British Israelism, Christian identity, Christian Fundamentalism et al. It represents fascistic socialism with an anointed monarchy, primitive tribal or racist collectivism, environmentalism, ethnic cleansing, strangely, anti-Semitism. We Aryans are the true Israel, they say. Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Norse, racial primacy, etc., etc. If you read some of the literature from the Aryan nations, Pete Peters or even the Montana Freeman, you'll see the ideology of this very well-funded faction at its grassroots, in effect, Christian patriot level. Of course, by now you had realized that the infiltration and subversion of the patriot movement by religious and ethnic racial bigots and fascists was top-down Hegelian planning and goes right to the door of 6 Buckingham Gate, London, SW, England, as well as to the Tom Valentine German Nazi boomed in this country. Our nation is slated to go with the British faction. And I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the writer of this letter is right on the money. They've got it pinned, just like I've been teaching you all this while. There are 2 factions, one represented by the Vatican, allied with the French Grand Orient Lodge of Freemasonry, which represents communism. And the other is the British oligarchy allied with international Zionism. It is Protestant in nature. And they continue, Lee and I oppose both factions, preferring objectivism and the individualistic and enlightenment philosophies of such patriots as Patrick Henry, Ethan Allen, Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, and other such heroes. And I must admit, ladies and gentlemen, so do I. The whole battle is essentially the old political power conflict between the 2 factions of royalty or nobility, the Guelphs and Welfs. These 2 noble clans can and do track their ancestry back through ancient Egypt and to ancient Mesopotamia. Imagine being so caught up in one's bloodline ancestry, another vestige of collectivist thinking, that one would destroy the world if necessary in order to conquer it. By the way, we have networked with several objectivists who have also examined the emergency law and government problem as well as the United Nations travesty. Some of these individuals are attorneys. They and we, independently, but coincidentally, have concluded the same thing. If we revoke emergency law and government and return to constitutional government, we simultaneously render null and void any and all treaties made with the United Nations or any other nation or sovereign entity. This is because these treaties were made not with the constitutional United States, but with the corporate United States. Dissolve the corporate United States, dissolve the treaties. Yes, it would work. We must then focus on exposing and revoking emergency law. We hope to hear back from you on this point. Call us at home if you want to discuss it. I certainly will. That's from Lee and Jean, who have done an awful lot of intelligence gathering and input that has helped us over the years, and I thank them. But I have to tell them and all of you that if you actually really believe that you're going to solve this problem at this late date with a vote or with a fax or with a telephone call or with a letter to your representatives or senators or by voting in someone to the national offices or to the White House who's going to clear up this problem, you are dreaming. It's gone too far. It's over the edge. We have no control on a national level whatsoever. They don't care about us. They don't listen to us. And they are going to have their new world order if they have to kill 6 billion people. Unfortunately, that's just about the whole world. But that's the way they think, ladies and gentlemen. And one of their goals is to reduce the overall population of the world by quite a bit. I have actually seen figures
written by these people in their own reports and papers, which talk about a total emerging population in the United States of America of 100 million people when the conflict is finished. That should give you some idea of what they are prepared to do and what depths of absolute tyranny that they are prepared to use in waging war upon those who would resist international socialism. I'm going to save that article for later. In fact, I may not even read it on the air. It's going to be in Veritas anyway. But you've got to hear this. It's entitled, How Easily We Killed Them. How Easily We Killed Them, by Ari Shavit, a very well-known and respected Israeli journalist who writes a column for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, a Hebrew language newspaper from which this article was adapted. We killed 170 people in Lebanon last month. Most were refugees. A good number were women, children, and the elderly. 9 civilians, including a 2-year-old and a 100-year-old man, were killed at Sakmor, a village. 11 civilians, including 7 children, were killed at Nabteya, a town, at the United Nations compound at Kana, a village. 102 were killed. We killed all these people, not in a fit of inflamed passion, not because of messianic extremism or nationalist fervor. We killed them under the umbrella of a peace campaign, under the leadership of a peace government, and in the midst of an election campaign that features peace. We killed them so that peace could be re-elected. We killed them because our peace coalition needed to prove it is just as tough as the opposition. How easily we killed them. Without shedding a tear, without establishing a commission of inquiry, without filling the streets with protest demonstrations, and without the carnage claiming a place as an election issue. It would seem we have matured quite a bit, for this time we shot and did not weep. This time we killed with yuppie efficiency. We were meticulous in our cold calculations and matter-of-fact considerations, meticulous in emptying out the villages in an orderly, precise manner, meticulous in killing only from a distance, and we did it all in a secular way, ignoring the archaic concepts of sin, of God's image of thou shalt not kill. Our one big alibi was this. The responsibility is not our own, it is Hezbollah's. But this is a somewhat bogus alibi, for when we decided to carry out a large-scale offensive in civilian regions in southern Lebanon, at a time when no mortal danger was posed to Israel, we decided, in fact, to spill the blood of X number of civilians. When we decided to remove 500,000 people from their homes and to shell those remaining behind, at a time when in Israel there was not a single civilian victim, we decided, in fact, to execute dozens. What allowed us to make such cruel decisions without perceiving ourselves as scoundrels was their anonymous statistical character. For we did not know that we would kill precisely that mother in Nabateya and her 7 children, all buried under the ruins of their home. We did not know we would kill precisely the 3 children of the Dib family and 5 children of the Belhas family, whose parents harbored the mistaken belief that the United Nations site at Kana would protect them from us. All we knew was that a large-scale killing of civilians was inseparable from the futuristic combat style the Israel Defense Forces have chosen. All we knew was that it could be assumed that the operation would kill 100 civilians, give or take a few. Still, it is important to be precise. We did not kill them with prior intent. We killed them because it was not important for us not to kill them. Because the yawning gap between the unlimited sacrosanct importance we attribute to our own lives and the very limited sacred character we attribute to the lives of others allowed us to kill them. Now listen very carefully to this next paragraph, because if it is true, then it's time that we take the vipers out of Washington, D.C., and restore the Constitution and the Republic to its lawful place as the supreme law of the land. Listen very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. Here is exactly what he says. We killed them out of a certain naive hubris, believing with absolute certitude. Let me read that to you again, ladies and gentlemen, so that you understand exactly what I am saying. Or I should say, what Ari Shavit is saying, or I should say, confessing, admitting. Quote, we killed them out of a certain naive hubris, believing with absolute certitude that now, with the White House, the Senate, and much of the American media in our hands, the lives of others do not count as much as our own. Believing we really have the right to instruct 400,000 people to leave their homes within 8 hours, and that we have the right, when those 8 hours have passed, to treat their homes as military targets, and that we have the right to drop 16,000 shells on their village and small towns, and that we have the right to kill without being guilty. An Israeli massacre can be distinguished in most respects from an Arab massacre in that it is not malicious, not carried out on orders from high above, and does not serve any strategic purpose. It contrasts with Israel's declared national policy and its accepted cultural norms. Yet while these distinctions are valid, they mitigate neither the gravity of the massacre nor our responsibility. And I'm going to tell you that that last few sentences are lies. Israel has committed massacres in its history, intentionally on orders from on high, in order to fulfill political agendas, just like the International Socialist and the Communist and everybody else has done throughout history. It is documented. It is proven. But this admission, this confession in this essay is beyond ignoring. It cannot be ignored, for it speaks of the highest treason. It speaks of the fact that this person is confessing that Israel owns the White House, the Senate, and most of the American media, and if that is true, we are justified in anything that we must do in order to end that treason. And in speaking out on this subject tonight, if the past is any indication of the future, I might have just ended my future. But I am a man of principle. I believe 100%, ladies and gentlemen, that a man or woman who is not willing to die for their principles and for certain ideals are already dead and are of no use or consequence whatsoever. And not only that, I'm just about sick of this whole bullshit mess. And if they come up here on my mountain after me, I will defend my family and my property and my life with every means at my disposal. and this country will witness a gun battle that they have never seen before in its history. I can assure you of that. You see, I stand behind my principles and what I believe in. Not like those freemen. Why is it that I had the feeling that they would not be willing to die for their principles? I knew it from day one. And the minute their power was cut off was when the siege ended. That won't happen here, I guarantee you. And until the men and women of this country take that attitude and demonstrate it, and some of us die for what we believe in, there is no hope of ever restoring Republican constitutional government in this country or anywhere else in this world, because if you are not willing to die for your principles and ideals and for freedom, you do not deserve to have it. That is the truth of that matter. I have a little note here from somebody who wrote, "Dear Sir, sorry there is no..." No, this is a note we wrote to the person. This person sent us an order. Said they wanted an autographed Waco. We don't have an autographed Waco. So we wrote a little note back, says, "Dear Sir, sorry there is no such material autographed Waco available on our list. Please call." We gave the number. And we did that because if you order an autographed Waco and we send you something else, we could be liable under the law. And so we don't do that. If your order is not specific or we can't reasonably decipher your order, we send your money back to you and ask that you clarify. But this person took affront to this and got real smart-ass about it and wrote this little note. "At this time, how many books are you promoting autographed and selling for $35? That's not the point. The point is, you ordered an autographed Waco. And under the law, we are obligated to supply you with what you ordered. Since all of the people, except one, in the Branch Davidian Last Will and Testament tape are dead, we could not provide you with any autographs, nor would we if they were alive. And so that's why we sent your money back with this little note for you to please call and clarify your order so that we could fill it for you. We didn't need your little smart-ass comment. But I got to tell you, we have entered your order now, even with this comment, for your autographed copy of Oklahoma City Day One, which obviously in your pea-brained mental state you thought was a Waco tape. I have another letter here. "Dear Bill, how are you doing? I realize that you are working extremely hard and truly appreciate your broadcast the hour of the time. I also receive Veritas, and it is also extremely valuable. Priceless," he says. "Enclosed, please find a check in the amount of $35 for an autographed copy of the book Oklahoma City Day One. I am sure that if it is anything like your broadcast and our Veritas, it too is priceless. May the good Lord bless you and your family. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Ron." I really appreciate that. And I've got to tell you, folks, we've been getting some extremely intelligent letters lately. We got a whole basket of letters about the Aaron Russo thing. Not one of them negative. All congratulatory. All expressed surprise and disappointment that it happened, of course, as did I and still do. Here's another letter. "Dear Mr. Cooper, I really enjoy your shortwave radio program. Keep up the good work. The reason I am writing you today is to request a song on your program. It is called Hey America by The Remnant. It's a great song with a great message about a subject we are all familiar with, the New World Order. I think your listeners will really enjoy it." And this is from Lucy. Lucy, I'm sure they would, but I don't have it. If you would send it to me, I'll listen to it. And if it's in conformance with the rules by which I broadcast, then I'll certainly will play it. You know, I love music, and anytime I can get my hands on some new stuff, I love it. Dear Mr. Cooper, hello from Texas. I love your program. You tell it like it is. It makes me sick how stupid the sheeple are. I tell people about the New World Order, but they think I'm crazy. I did just like you said on the radio. I did my own research. You are 100% correct on the things you say about the secret societies and the New Order. You have another ally down here in Texas. I love what you're doing, Bill. I have most of your programs on tape. I listen to them all the time. Could I give people a copy of them? Yes, you can. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, anything we produce, you can reproduce and give to anyone as long as you give it. You are forbidden to sell anything that we produce, even at cost. If you're going to give it away, then give it away. If you're going to sell it, you are forbidden. All of our material is copyrighted. You cannot sell anything that we produce, but you are welcome to give it away from the goodness of your heart. Reproduce as much as you want and give it away. That's fine. Tapes, anything. My book. You can take my book down to the copy store and copy it as long as you give those copies away. If you ever sell a copy, I'm telling you, I'll find out about it and I'll get you. So, yes, you can. He says, the apathy down here in Texas is making me sick. People better wake up quick. Signed, James. P.S. Do you know anything about the Tri-States Militia in South Dakota? I heard their leader was an FBI informant. His name is John Parsons. Yes, John Parsons is an admitted FBI informant. It's on record in the trial transcript of Willie Ray Lampley, his wife and compatriots, that took place in Oklahoma. So, what have I got here? Oh, got a letter from the Midnight Special and the Midnight Angel, who are, let me see, KEX5595. I want to thank you for that good letter. I'm not going to read it on the air, but I want to thank you. And here's something you all need to know. McCarthy aide, family killed in plane crash. Now, this is not a coincidence. This is the New World Order getting rid of people or getting vengeance on people that they've been wanting to get vengeance on for many years. Joseph McCarthy was 100% right, and he was vilified and destroyed by the socialist-controlled press in this country. And now they got another one. McCarthy aide and family killed in plane crash. Burbank, California. Gerard David Shine, an aide to Senator Joseph McCarthy during the senator's hunt for communists in the 1950s, was killed along with his wife and son when their small plane crashed on a street shortly after takeoff. The single-engine B-craft Sundowner slammed into the ground near the Golden State Freeway about 2 p.m. Wednesday after departing from the Burbank Airport, officials said. And it goes on to talk about the crash. It says it's under investigation. Our people in California have spoke to some of the people who are close to this incident, and they say that it was no accident. Dear Mr. Cooper, I called about a tape a while back. I got you, I thought, by mistake. I wanted the tapes of April of Morgan or William Morgan. I talked about my father being a Shriner in 33rd degree Freemason, how he forgave his family for the satanic light. He does not know me, his son, or grandchildren. He misses out on the wonders of God and his life for us. This is what I really like about this letter, folks. I am an elementary school teacher and counselor. I live in the Bible Belt called Oklahoma. I believe in God, country, family. I've taught that in my counseling classes since 1981. I also teach that if a government wants your guns, they also want something else, your freedom. For example, China, Russia, Cambodia, Germany, South Africa, etc. Then they understand that. All of our teachers believe in the freedom of ourselves. We all hate the New World Order. We understand what they will do to Christians, teachers, people who want and desire freedom. I understand I am a dead man when the New World Order takes over. I am fighting the VOTEC system, that's Vocational Technical System in Oklahoma. They want a trade on all the elementary children starting in kindergarten. I said no, and our principal agrees. A fifth grade teacher came to us about a passage in his outline of a chapter in his text. At homosexuality. I can't read this first word, ladies and gentlemen. Something at homosexuality. I told him to take it to the principal and show it. Talk about this. This something. He did. She agreed with him and told him to throw it out. To watch carefully for any more of this crap. This was part of outcome-based education called PASS in Oklahoma. The DNA just about withdrew from the NEA. Oh, the Oklahoma Educational Association just about withdrew from the National Education Association over this ideology. Our school district, I can speak for elementary only, said no in a big way. I have had bouts with a couple of teachers over my thoughts on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now they understand about these things. But they are mostly under 40 years old. I'm 45 years young. I am sorry this letter is lengthy, but I've got to get it said. I understand this through the tapes, Veritas, and the Hour of the Time. The teachers understand this through me. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for standing tall in the saddle for us. I am reloading as fast as I can. Good for you. I am acquainted with some of the best bench rest shooters in the world. I've gotten several short stoves stories published in the Varmint Hunters magazine. I have never shot a coyote over 880 yards away, but I have at 800 yards. I got interested in this New World Order through reloading and it's something parts at times. This poison is far Western Oklahoma, and I could not understand why our Masonic fathers forgave their children for the lodge. The Illuminati tapes woke us up. Setting on a sand hill one June night, we tore up 1/2 acre of love grass, kicking and stomping about. Then I ordered those tapes and many others over the next 18 months. I cannot afford the Mystery Babylon series, only the periodic tapes I get. I've got to spread my monies about for family and food. My wife cleans house, we work hard, and I reload as many as I can. There are several of us putting monies together as to get more powder, bullets, primers, etc. There are many of us sleepers out here. We are waking up slowly through you. Not all public educators believe in the New World Order, just the opposite. Yes, we fight the New World Order. Outcome-based education at every portal. We here in our public school district say no to the New World Order. I hope you do not think that all public school teachers everywhere believe in the outcome-based education New World Order. We do not. Keep up the fight. We are out here in the wilderness looking for the godly light, not the satanic Masonic light of Ben and my father's light. Ben lost $84 million to the lodge. My family lost a father and grandfather. May God forgive them in the end. Keep up the good work. We're listening and waiting, gathering, if slowly, as much as we can. Keep the faith. May God guide and protect us all. Keep the sun to your back, nose to the wind, eyes on the horizon, hand on the throttle, crosshairs level. thank you, Mike. Very good letter. plotting world order in Rome. Listen carefully to this. Vatican expert Malachi Martin tries to scope out papal succession. Your novel depicts an international plot by Vatican insiders and internationalists to install a new pope and establish a new world order. How fictional is this storyline? He says, not very. There is an unspoken alliance today between powers inside the Vatican and leaders of major international humanist organizations who would change the Roman Catholic Church from a sacred institution to one whose primary function is to act as a stabilizing social force in the world. They see the Church as the only global structure able to do this. The one obstacle is John Paul II. He is seen as a defender of medieval traditions. They want a pope who shares their more liberal, globalist view. Who are these powers? And he answers, cardinals of the Church, the men who will elect the next pope. I describe them as conciliarists. The Church today is divided. Monolithic faith is gone. The new rival factions, traditionalists who prefer the Church as it was before the reforms of the Second Vatican Council, and conciliarists who want to liberalize Church doctrine on everything from divorce and contraception to abortion and homosexuality. The numbers are about even, but conciliarists hold the positions of power. They think John Paul II is too conservative. Traditionalists don't think he is conservative enough. What about the non-church part of the alliance? Who are they? And he answers, academia, foundations, non-governmental organizations, even some governmental agencies. They have vast resources devoted to population control, education, and economic and social stabilization. If they can get the Roman Catholic Church to side with them in the social and cultural field in a world that is dysfunctional, they'll have another element of stability. This sounds rather conspiratorial. And he answers, just as I always have told you, listen to this, it's not a conspiracy, but it's deliberate. Conciliarists and non-church globalists think the same way. Neither likes the Pope's policies. They are preparing for the selection of the next Pope. Why write this as fiction? Why not name names? And he answers, some of the cardinals involved are well respected and loved. Understandably, many people would react emotionally in defense of the cardinals and would miss the larger point. I plan to write a monograph in the fall that names some names. Plotting World Order in Rome. Get it. Read it. That appeared in the U.S. News and World Report, June 10, 1996. You can get it and read it yourself. Parable about shaping behavior, another editorial that appeared in Machine Design, May 23, 1996. Once upon a time, there lived a man named Clarence who had a pet frog named Felix. Clarence lived a modestly comfortable existence on what he earned at Walmart, but he always dreamed of being wealthy. Felix, he exclaimed one day, we're going to be rich. I'm going to teach you how to fly. Felix, of course, was terrified at the prospect. I can't fly. I'm a frog, not a canary. Clarence, disappointed at Felix's reaction, told him, your negative attitude could be a problem. I'm sending you to class. So Felix went to a 3-day seminar and learned about problem solving, time management, and effective communication, but nothing about flying. On the first day of flying lessons, Clarence explained to Felix that their apartment had 15 floors, and each day, Felix would jump out of a window, starting with the first floor, eventually getting to the top floor. After each jump, Felix would analyze how well he flew, identify the most effective flying techniques, and implement the improved process for the next flight. By the time they reached the top floor, Felix would know how to fly. Felix pleaded for his life, but his pleas fell on deaf ears. Felix doesn't understand how important this is, thought Clarence. But he was determined not to be defeated by a negative attitude, so he opened the window and threw out Felix, who landed with a thud. On the second day, Felix again begged not to be thrown out the window. But Clarence opened his pocket guide to managing more effectively and showed Felix the part about how one must always expect resistance when implementing new programs. Out went Felix from the second floor, and he hit the ground with an even more painful landing. On the third day, Felix tried a ploy. He asked for a delay in the project until the weather was more favorable for flying, but Clarence pulled out a timeline, pointed to the third milestone, and asked, "You don't want the schedule to slip, do you?" Felix knew that if he didn't jump today, he would have to jump twice tomorrow. So he jumped from the third floor. On it went to higher and higher floors, and Felix tried his best. By the seventh day, Felix no longer begged for mercy. "You know you're killing me, don't you?" he said. Clarence replied that Felix's performance so far had been less than exemplary, failing to meet any of the milestones he had set for him. Felix became resigned to his fate and said, "Okay, open the window." With that, he leapt out, taking care to aim for a jagged rock that was sure to put him out of his misery. He hit it perfectly and was instantly dispatched from the mortal world. Clarence was upset. His project had failed to meet a single goal. Felix not only failed to fly, he didn't even take well to training or setting goals. And he didn't seem to understand when Clarence told him to fall smarter, not harder. Finally, Clarence analyzed the process to determine where it had gone wrong. He concluded that he needed a smarter frog. The New World Order would be well versed to read this and understand it. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you paid close attention to the first half of this broadcast. And God bless each and every single one of you.